Hey, this is Mike Cashew, and this is the Brute Strength Podcast. This is a special episode of the podcast. I'm joined by Brute Director of Strength and Conditioning, Nick Fowler, and one of the co-founders of Active Life RX, Sean Pastuch. And we're talking about the pec tears. If you're not familiar with what I'm talking about, in this CrossFit, in the 2017 CrossFit Regionals, I think there were over 30 men with either torn or partially torn or just injured pecs from the dip workout or muscle up workout or a combination of the two. So it's been a really controversial topic, and people have been asking, is Dave Castro just a dick? Is it terrible programming? What is causing these things to happen? So in this episode, we talk about some of the possible reasons and how to prepare yourself and your athletes to prevent injury in the future. Hope you enjoy the show.
We are live. All right, guys. Thanks for joining us. Today, we're going to talk about all the pec tears. I remember thinking to myself originally when the first weekend, I think we had like 8 or something like that. And I initially thought Dave Castro is an idiot. What's he doing? This is just a terrible, he's a terrible person. He's irresponsible for programming this way. And since then, we've had a lot of time to discuss what's really going on here. And, it's been a really hot topic in the community. So I've changed my views a little bit, and I know both of you have a ton of knowledge on this topic, and we've been talking about it a ton. So we know that you are interested in this, so we're going to dissect it a little bit. So first off, what are all of the possible reasons that people are getting these pec tears?
Oh man, I think it's, well, so my opinion is I think it's very individually dependent, right? Like, and Sean, you can be able to talk in a lot more detail to this, but everyone's built so differently. Their training histories are so different, right? The types of injuries that are occurring, they're not just all pec tears, right? They're pec injuries or strains or something.
Right.
Some are occurring in training, some are occurring during events, some are even occurring after event too, in the muscle up with like Dan Bailey. So I think that there's not one answer to this. And all we can really do is just hypothesize on what could actually be happening, right?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that in the sense that specifically it's probably different for everybody. But generally, I think there has to be a common thread that caused them all to break down, because it's not like there were knee injuries in the overhead squat workout where everybody had different deficiencies coming in as well.
Yeah.
So I think even myself, I can say I've gotten caught up in the whole hype of the injury and stuff like that and said, well, this is probably what's causing it. And I think that in a lot of cases, that's a contributing factor. And I've talked about the stress of regionals. Right. And the simplicity of a movement like ring dips and guys being able to take it for granted and say, okay, this is not hard. I can do this fast. I can do this well. But coming into it in a body that's predisposed to injury because of the stress that they're under because of regionals, doing it over and over and over again, taxing the muscle in the first place. But I do think that for each person who suffered an injury, there's a different cause specifically of that injury. Right. So generally, I think that the stress of competition plays a big part for these guys. And then I think that specifically the breakdown for each person is probably very different.
Yeah. Yeah. I would agree with that for sure. I think, and that for me, where I think, coming from a coach's mindset, I think about forward, right? Moving forward, thinking forward is like, okay, well, this has happened, right? We have, 30 plus, I don't know, however many injuries that have been pec related. And so, what can be done in 2018 to make sure that athletes are better prepared, right? And I think there are some concrete things that can be done that are being done by some that are, keeping it, reducing the risk of injury, if you will.
Before we get into that, so Sean, you're talking about there are lots of different reasons. Like everybody probably has their unique reason for why this occurred. What are some of the big ones that stand out to you?
Well, so the biggest one to me is the stress. I think that even the guys who weren't in a panic state, right, who weren't like nervous about regionals, even the guys who went into it feeling really confident, feeling really good, I think that if we measured it, there's probably a physiological change to the way that they're functioning in the days leading up to it. And then practicing that event or a variation thereof multiple times during the week, you know, we work out so that we can recover, and the recovery is where we make the progress. So if these guys are working out and testing and then training something different and testing a different way and testing a different way, we don't get the recovery. And then when you're asked to go at maximum speed, your body is stressed from the hormone balance of you know, the cortisol changes that come with real emotional stress. And then the muscles are already stressed to begin with because you've been practicing it all week. So I think those two things combined are probably the biggest reason why we saw such a general injury happen over the course of so many athletes. But I've also read, I mean, Talena Fortunato, I think, wrote the best piece I've seen on this. Her and Ryan DeBell of The Movement Fix. And Nick, you actually sent me Talena's. But the idea that they preloaded the structures responsible for eccentrically controlling the movement so much in the two work and in the workout prior and in the movement coupled with the dips that they predisposed themselves further to injury without anybody realizing that that was going to happen.
Yeah. So do you think in training that, so, I mean, you know, the demo team must have, demo this tons of times, but do you think that the psychological effect of competition brought these athletes to a new level and you know, preparing for this huge event brought them to, like, they went so much faster basically, that coupling those two movements mixed with going that fast is what produced the problems?
I do. I mean, Nick, you can probably speak to this better because we're not anybody's primary coach. Right, we assist people like Nick. You know, we don't write the program for anybody. We look at what, you know, Rob from Raw Strength has developed for James Newberry, and we modify it a little bit for James Newberry's anatomy and physiology. Same thing with, you know, the people we share with Nick. But it was a really hard thing to do, but it was a challenge to have these conversations with guys and women leading up to regionals that you do not need to do this workout multiple times leading up to the event. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was the, well, why not? I want to see if this would be faster. I want to see if that would be faster. And I don't think it's that hard. We had those conversations over and over and over again with these athletes. So I absolutely think that there is that mental dilemma for these guys of how much should they practice it and how much should they not.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I think there is definitely a level of intensity that only happens in competition. As much as you try, as much as athletes try to recreate it in training, it's just not, it's not going to happen for many different reasons for different people, right? Like just the simple like noise and volume level of the crowd and the music and just, you know, leading up, I think has a big part to do with. So, I mean, at the end of the day, like the pec injuries, right, are happening because the force basically outweighs the muscle or the structure's ability to stay intact. And so I think when you put intensity, right, fast cycle rates at a range of motion that I would argue that most athletes are not exposed to enough through a training year. If you think about it, most people exposure in a dip or on rings generally most of the time is on a muscle up. Right. Like, and these are, you know, the questions I have to athletes is like, think about it. Like when in the year did you train to the standard that regionals is asking you this year?
Right.
And how often was it an actual ring dip? Right. Or in the bottom of the rings. And I think that the answer will be less than optimal. Right. And so what happens is like most of that exposure happens in the muscle up where you're catching a little higher and the dip isn't really a focus. Now, they're generally like, you know.
And you don't have that forceful eccentric.
Yeah. I mean, just that stretch reflex that a lot of people are using. And here's the thing, right, is that it's a competitive sport. If you want to win, there's inherent risk to it. Right. Yeah. And so like the programming isn't bad. you know, athletes aren't necessarily, you know, performing it incorrectly, or, you know, there's no evil, you know, there's nothing bad that's actually inherent in the movement. It's when we take our dysfunctional athlete, it could be range of motion, it could be structurally, it could be just the functional end range of motion. So the ability to someone contract muscles and produce power at and beyond the end range of that joint, I think is really the heart of the culprit. That coupled with like a structural imbalance, like the posterior capsule of the shoulder, like rear delt, you know, lat, like when you have either weakened or imbalanced stuff and you're relying more on a pec in an end range motion where your end range is weak, either lack of exposure or just there could be a couple different reasons. But I think that in my mind is probably one of the biggest factors, right? And so just as an athlete, ask yourself, like, when did you,
Can I jump in and help you get specific?
Yeah.
There's two things that I think are not really being talked about.
Break out your notepads, guys.
And take your notepads out.
Someone's about to drop some knowledge.
Well, so one of them is we talked about full range of motion, right? That rep needs to be full range of motion. But for CrossFit, the full range of motion of a squat is hip below the knee. Is that full range of motion for you, Mike? Is that full range of motion for you, Nick? It's not full range of motion for me, right? So for some people, maybe that does tax their end range, and for other people that doesn't, right? Introducing this range of motion for the dip is something that for a lot of people, they're not training, because to them, getting to the bottom of a dip is if the ring touches my chest or my shoulder, I press out, I'm done. I don't think getting to the finish at the top was the problem as much as getting to the bottom and changing direction in a place that they've never been before, right? So it's like, okay, we get, you know, Charles Poliquin said, strength is gained in the range it's trained. And touching on what you were saying before, Nick, is these guys maybe knew their end range of motion, maybe didn't. But one of the things that Nick Sorrell, who's the gymnastics coach for us at Brute, right, that he indoctrinates and drills from the beginning is spend time in your end ranges, right? Get your body used to being in uncomfortable places and slowly begin to produce force from those places. And I mean, he nailed me with it. I don't know if you remember the first Brute retreat, we get there and we're doing handstand pushups as a group. And he's like, Sean, how many handstands could you do in 90 seconds? And I said, I don't know, maybe 30. He's like, that's great. He's like, you should not be doing any. He said that in front of 40 people. I'm like, what do you mean, man? What the fuck is that all about? And he's like, well, can you do a handstand? I said, no. He's like, can you do a tripod? I said, I don't think so. Can you do a headstand? I said, I don't think so. He's like, then you've learned a trick. Right? You haven't learned a skill that you've been able to turn into proficiency. You've learned a trick. Go back and learn the skills and then perform it proficiently. I think something like a ring dip especially is taken for granted so much by athletes at this level. They hop on the rings. Yep, I can do that. They don't drill the skill of that movement. They don't find the inadequacies in their range of motion. They don't find, you know, when they start kipping, they're not hitting the same spot every time. Now they're gliding forward. They're gliding back. They're hitting a different location. And for how many times have they done it before? Twice? No, 100? 1,000? How many do they need to? How much time do they need to be there for? I think that's a huge problem people aren't taking into consideration.
Yeah. And I always think about training kind of to tie into what you're saying, Sean, is making sure that as a coach, as athletes, that we're ensuring that the progression goes from isometric, right, static strength, positional work, into strict strength, obviously in all these full range of motion, right, into dynamic. And I think a lot of people do not get exposure, spend time. It's boring work, right? Like, you know, isometric holds, they're just not fun. And so people are just going right to the dynamic, right? I think now, I mean, take the pull-up, right, the kipping pull-up. It's now pretty common knowledge that you should really have some strict pull-ups before you start doing kipping pull-ups, right?
I hope you're right about that.
Well, versus like 3, 4, 5 years ago, where it was like, oh, just do a kipping pull-up. You don't have a regular pull-up, don't worry about it, right? But like, that's where your engine will outpace your structure, right? And so I think that if you haven't developed a foundation of isometric strength stability into strict strength, right? Strict movement in full range of motion into dynamic strength, like you're asking for trouble, no matter what it is.
Well, I agree with that. In part, I think that at the level that we're at, I don't know that was the problem for the guys who were tearing, right? Like I would imagine that somebody like a Christian Harris, or who I know personally, could very, very slow and controlled come to the bottom of a dip and press out of it. I don't think he lacks the strict strength to perform that movement. And I don't know what his training program looks like, but I would imagine he lacks the time under tension in changing direction of the movement. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just the exposure to the bottom.
It could also be I'm trying to look for like common threads in these people, but it could have something to do with a huge differential in the power some of these guys are able to produce with their musculature in that area versus their connective tissue strength. So let me translate this and correct me if I'm wrong, guys, but I think what you were getting at, Nick, is isometric. Well, you have two different types of strength. You have your muscular strength and your connective tissue strength. Muscle tissue is built very quickly, and most people don't take the time to build up their connective tissue, holding their muscles to their bones and everything together. And so doing kipping pull-ups before you have that strength in place puts your connective tissue at such risk. So again, I don't know if that's what, you know, at a basic level, that's not what was the case for some of these guys, but maybe their muscles are just way more powerful than their connective tissue just because they don't have as balanced of training or background or anatomy or whatever it may be.
Maybe, but then I think you would have seen this, you know, we looked at the history of this this test specifically, right? 2012 CrossFit Games, right? The second to last workout, or the last workout, was Elizabeth, 21:15:9. They let them do power cleans and ring dips. Mm-hmm. And to me, that event in itself kind of negates all of the argument of pre-fatigue that's come out about this year, right? Because those guys have been working out now for 4 days, and it was just dropped on them. Boom, you're going to go ahead and you're going to do this workout as fast as possible. They were doing Elizabeth in times that people couldn't do fresh today, and nobody tore that we know of, right? It certainly wasn't an epidemic of 10%.
Right.
Then you go to 2 years later, because then people say, well, the standard wasn't there. 2 years later at regionals in 2014, they introduced the same movement with the same standard. Ring dips, hips below the hand, all the way at the top, shoulder has to touch a band. And we didn't have an epidemic of 10% tears. I know Adrian Conway had some issues with it. He talked about that in the brute shoot, but it certainly wasn't an epidemic when anybody was talking about it the way we are now. Now you fast forward 2 years later, or 3 years later, and we're here, right? And it's, well, maybe it was the weight vest, maybe they were tired. I think that it just comes down to the idea that the intensity with which they were able to do these was so much higher because nothing happened before it in the workout. Mm-hmm. Right? The 50s at regionals 2 years ago, they had rowing, box jumps, deadlifts. I think it was rowing, deadlifts, box jumps, then the dips.
Yep.
It might have even been something else.
Wall balls.
And then there you go, wall balls. So they were shot already. Guys weren't going out and breaking off sets of 21:15:9.
Yeah.
But it was, let me see if I can bang out 10 of these and then come out. And they certainly weren't fast to the bottom twitching out.
Great point.
When you look at, you know, and when you look at the games 3 years ago or 5 years ago, they didn't have 2 weeks. I would be willing to throw money on the table that those guys hadn't done a ring dip in 2 to 3 weeks prior to that event. Because you're going to practice the events that you know of for the games, and then you're going to spend your time focusing on recovering and prepping for what's to come. And you're not going to do anything else, excuse me, during the week of the games. It's not like they're going to train on top of it. And they found out about ring dips 5 minutes before they had to do them.
Right.
Right?
You keep going. Finish that thought.
That's it. So the thought was that they didn't have the opportunity to develop, you know, emotional stress that was going to develop all these stress hormones for it. Although it could be argued that that was already in place because it was regionals and it was the games. But then they didn't have the opportunity to train this movement multiple times during the week leading up to it. And they couldn't do it at super high intensity because they were shot already.
Do you think there's a common thread? I'm sure there are lots of different reasons like you're talking about, but is there a common thread with some of these guys?
I don't know. You know, I don't know the guys. My assumption would be if we could do some kind of, you know, blood work prior and find all this stuff out after the fact, that we would find that a lot of these guys were in a hormonally stressed place leading into regionals. And I could be wrong, but I think that there's a huge underappreciation of the way hormones are playing a role in athletes' performance.
It seems like there were a good bit of bigger guys.
Yeah, but then there were smaller guys too.
Yeah.
You know, I agree, but, you know.
Yeah.
The one consistent piece is that there's no women. And that brings up an interesting point, right? I think, it's all kind of speculation. I think one of the pieces that plays an important route is that men are stronger, and so they can get away with a lot more imbalances relative to the power that they can produce. And so, and this isn't the end all, it's just one of, I think, the pieces, but it's if you look at women in general, right, they're pectoral pushing muscles aren't as strong, so they need to compensate somewhere else, right? And so that's either in a bigger kip, in technique. A lot of times it's just with more engaged tricep, like posture, shoulder strength, things like that. Now, there's outliers, right? You can always pick somebody out that's not the case. But
I want to let you finish, but I just want to make sure that people who are going to watch us have the opportunity to understand the tricep's job, right? Because, yeah, they're going to use the tricep more to lock out, but I don't think people are getting hurt at the top. I think they're getting hurt at the bottom. And now the tricep is mute.
Yeah, but think about this, Sean, or at least this is the way I think about it, right? As I think that if the tricep is helping sooner, then that delays the fatigue of potentially the pec, right? And just in a position, right? So the sooner you get out of that kind of the anteriorly dominant pushing, the more you're going to potentially hold off fatigue in that muscle, right? Now, again, it's not definitive. I'm just saying that, like, yeah, sure, you only start engaging really above parallel in the tricep, but if the sooner you do that, right, the sooner you share the load. And if you're sharing the load, you have a potential to stave off fatigue. And I think the bigger thing is that because they don't have that power, they're not creating as much force, right? And I think that's a big thing, is that the strong, powerful males, one thing that you've seen, I mean, I don't know everybody, but everybody that I know, I would characterize, I mean, everybody's going to regionals, are kind of strong, powerful males, but the ability to produce a huge amount of force in the bottom of the position is,
Well, so I think that you made good points with everything you just said. I just want to come back to them a little bit, right? And I don't mean to be argumentative with you.
I want to insert into the podcast like a little like battle sound.
I mean, like, here's my thing with the tricep, right? I don't buy the argument that the women have more engaged triceps than men because the pec can't handle the load. I buy that women's times are slower because their strength breaks down. And when we go into that, right, it's the idea of, okay, so when the men start to fatigue their pec, if the tricep engagement is higher in the women because they can't use their pec as well, wouldn't then the automatic biomechanical fall be to, okay, well, let's use the pec more then for the men, the tricep more for the men as well, right? Once they can't utilize the strength from the pec anymore, and we're saying, okay, they're now, let's just say, equivalent to the way that a woman with their pec development can press from the beginning, wouldn't they then revert to the same biomechanics as the woman?
No, because look at a squat pattern, right? Someone who's like a squat pattern, someone who's quad dominant. It's not like once their quads start fatiguing, they start squatting correctly, right? Meaning, you know, using glutes and hamstrings externally rotating, right? So like, I don't think that you can, yeah, I don't believe it works that way. And this is the thing is I'm not saying that any, you know, in my mind, I have a list of like 10 contributing factors, right? And so where I'm coming from is from a coach's standpoint saying, okay, if there's 10 contributing factors in my mind, then I want to ensure that the athletes I coach, right, the programs I create, the way I prepare somebody for competition starts to look at those 10 things and starts to mitigate them. Right. And so I think like if you wanted to quantify like, okay, maybe like 10%, 5% has to do with this idea of like posterior structure, balance, imbalance with females versus males. But it's just one very, very small piece, right? It's not like, oh, that's what did it.
Well, so to answer the squat thing, I actually disagree with you a little bit in that I'm a guy who much prefers to hinge, right? I'll deadlift 400 pounds and be okay with it. I'm not squatting 300 pounds right now. I couldn't do it today. I'm you know, somewhat embarrassed to say that on live streaming, but I haven't focused on my squat much. So if you ask me to squat 135, you know, with beautiful squat technique, I'll do it. But if you put 245 on the bar, my chest is diving down and I'm deadlifting that barbell with it on my back. It's going to look like a good morning. So I think we do default to where we're strong when the opportunity is given to us. But I think that, you also touched on a really good point, which is to talk about the way that people are training in general. I think that a lot of people think that our company, right, that Active Life helps people prevent injury, when in reality, that's a huge misconception. We detect subacute injury and take care of it before it becomes a problem for people. So we can say, you can't do this well, right? You can't load this position well, you're not hurt right now in a sense that you can't perform, but if you continue to do it this way, that problem that you already have, and it is a problem, will manifest in such a way that you will have to recognize it and deal with it. Let's handle it now and make sure it's not a problem in the future. I think that a lot of these guys who got hurt, if I had to guess, were dealing with some kind of dysfunction that might have been that they just can't do this, right? It doesn't have to be something specific to a dip. But if their shoulder wasn't functioning properly, then they find themselves in a situation where they're going to use it in a way that is best compensated for their dysfunction. Yeah. And that could lead to a problem.
And that's I guess exactly the point I'm trying to make. And I think if you add that with the event prior and you're fatiguing already imbalanced structures, like, you know, I mean, handstand pushups, right? Like, you're fatiguing the triceps, right? You're you know, the posterior kind of portion of that shoulder is being used. I mean, it depends on who you are and everything, but stay with me, right? then going into a workout that requires all that and you fatigue what has already been a weakened imbalance, then you're going to rely on what you're stronger even more, right? So I think it sounds like we're saying the same thing.
Oh, we are. And yeah, we are 100%. And that's the idea of doing things that don't seem like you're going to translate because they're good for a healthy body.
Yeah.
And having a healthy body perform well when you ask it to. Yeah.
See,
I'll cut you off. We got to move on. We're moving on from this one. Okay. Let's talk about what can people do in their training to prevent injuries? What can coaches do to prevent injuries in their athletes' training going forward?
I think, so for me, I think you need to pay attention. I think this idea that coaches can pull different pieces from different places and put them just, you know, without thinking because it's worked for somebody else into a place is irresponsible, right? So like, looking at it, you know, the population you coach, the person you coach, like the people you have in front of you, and saying, what do these people need? And then building specific pieces for those people, right?
Yeah, I agree with that. I also think that there's a massive responsibility of athletes and coaches to shift the macro depending on when the season is, right? So if we're looking at a competitive athlete, for some people, that's going to be competing in the Granite Games as their CrossFit Games, right? The Granite Games qualifier is their CrossFit Games. For other people, it's the CrossFit Games. So depending on who you are, your season timing is different if you're competitive. And I think that there's the early off season, the macro needs to be, how do we do everything possible to get the body in a position to train this year? How do we make sure that everything is in line so that a Nick Fowler can push this athlete without having to risk injury as much? And that means if you can't do 21 muscle-ups unbroken, but you want to, you don't spend the first 3 months of the season or the off season working on your muscle-ups. You spend the first 3 months working on creating an environment for your shoulders in which you'll be able to train muscle-ups enough to get that goal.
Yeah.
That's the biggest thing. And I think the second thing is coaches have to be willing to tell their athletes, no, you don't need to do that. You need to be comfortable being uncomfortable with your level of preparation because you're ready, right? And then last is what Nick said, and in total agreement, pay attention. If you feel something, you need to say something, and we need to make a decision if that's a problem or if that's just something that should be expected with training.
Yeah.
And from a very, very micro practical level, something that everyone can implement right now, just start following the standards of CrossFit.com right now and all year long. You know what the ring dip standard is. You know what the handstand push-up standard is. Don't wait until the open or regionals to start practicing that standard. And I know personally how, you know, I know the temptation of wanting to not follow those standards to do a little bit better in your workouts if you're doing a class or going against people in your gym. It's very tempting not to use that full range of motion. But if you can just practice the discipline of following those standards right now, you're going to set yourself up for so much more success down the road, not only from injury prevention standpoint, but if you're getting the full range of motion, you're going to be building, you're going to have better structural balance in the long run.
Well, and the other thing too is, because 99% of people listening to this are not going to go to regionals. That's just a fact.
Right.
So spend more time under tension, right? Work through 3 to 4 second eccentrics in all of your lifts where it's safe to do it, right? You don't want to bring a clean down or a snatch down for 3 to 4 seconds, but work on a slow eccentric squat from once every week or two, right? Work on bringing your pecs down slow. Work unilaterally. There's nothing wrong with not going fast all the time. In fact, it's beneficial for your tendons and for your muscles. So I think that's something that people are not doing anywhere near enough. It's like tempo is a 5-letter word, not a 4-letter word. People need to use it.
Yeah. I think that what I'm hearing also is just that the thread through all this is just be patient, right? Like there's a time to slow down, right? There's a time to move correctly. And I think prioritizing and valuing the quality of movement is one of the best things you can do, right? Like, sure, it's great that you put up 300 pounds or you do something in 2 minutes, right? But I think as a culture, if we can somehow, look at somebody and be like, man, that person moves so well, and really admire that as much as we do, you know, a 500 pound squat, 500 pound deadlift, like, you know, things like that. I think that overall, you're looking at a much, much better 5-year future.
Mm-hmm. 5-year future, 10-year future, but also, man, if someone starts spending the time today getting ready for the open next year, focusing on what you guys are both talking about, time and attention and movement quality, they're going to have a better one year plan as well. Because there's George a lot Sanchez, of what's that?
George Sanchez do that?
Exactly, man. For those of you who don't know, we had a guy qualify for the games for the first time yesterday named George Sanchez, and he's been a poster child for Brute, and he's followed the gymnastics program to a T. Came in, you know, really with nothing impressive in terms of gymnastics whatsoever, not, you know, pretty low quality movement, if you will. And he followed it to a T, and he won that. He won the dip workout. He has beautiful movement. He's healthy. And he qualified for the games for the first time this year in the most competitive year of all time. So it really just speaks volumes to the power of taking your time, laying a solid foundation, and you know, allowing yourself to reach your full potential, if you will.
Well, and the thing for people to learn from him is when we were at the retreat back in September, we did a few workouts that were, you know, judged by another athlete, right? He didn't win the group. I don't think he pulled the best score of everybody who was there. Nobody else there besides Mary Beth and Jeff Prejean, who went masters, nobody else who was there made the games. Mm-hmm. But he respected the process. He wasn't trying to win the CrossFit regional in September.
Right.
Training is to get better, right? It's competing where you're going to start measuring yourself. And I think that's where people want to win their training. You can't do that. The way you're going to win your training is by waking up the next morning and be a better version of yourself.
Mm-hmm. You know? Love it. All right, guys, we're going to cut it there. Thank you so much. Hope everyone enjoyed this. Be safe out there. Take care of yourself.
See you guys.